Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Chanda Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Gopi Chanda Vallabha Jaya Giridhara Dhari Jaya Giridhara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Namuna Tira Bana Chohari Natira bana chahari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita, Gauranita, Jaya Gauranita. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.
Jaya Prabhupada.
Pura Premanande. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Nanda. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadara Shri Vasadi Gauravakavinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Tato Jaya Mudirayat.
Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki.
Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Narayan Rishi, the Supermost Human, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed, almost to nil. And loving devotional service unto the Supreme Person, whose praise with transcendental songs is established as an irrevocable fact. Thank you for allowing me to speak on the Bhagavatam today. I'm requesting the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas who may be listening, that I can say something useful just for today, and the blessings of all the Vaishnavas as well. So we are in first canto. Chapter 15, the title of the chapter is The Pandavas Retire Timely, and today we are worshipping Shloka 31, 115-31. Vishoka Brahma Sampatya.
Vishoka Brahma Sampatya.
Sanchina Dvaita Samshaya. Lina Prakriti Nargunyat.
Lina Prakriti Nargunyat.
Alinga Tvara Sambhavaha.
Alinga Tvara Sambhavaha.
Ashoka Brahma Sampatya.
Ashoka Brahma Sampatya.
Sanchina Dvaita Samshaya.
Sanchina Dvaita Samshaya.
Lina Prakriti Nargunyat.
Alinga
Tvara Sambhavaha. Please chant.
Vishoka Brahma Sampatya.
Vishoka Brahma Sampatya.
Sanchina Dvaita
Samshaya.
Nina
Prakriti Nagunya. Alinga Tvara Sambhava. Vishoka Brahma Sampatya. Sanchina Dvaita Samshaya. Lina Prakriti Nargunya. Alinga Tvara Sambhava. Vishoka Brahma Sampatya. Sanchina Dvaita Samshaya. Okay. Synonyms, feel free to say along if you would like. Vishoka, free from bereavement. Brahma Sampatya, by possession of spiritual assets. Sanchina, being completely cut off. Dvaita Samshayaha, from the doubts of relativity. Lina, merged in. Prakriti, material nature. Nargunyat, due to being in transcendence, Alingatvat, because of being devoid of a material body, Asambhavaha, free from birth and death. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Because of his possessing spiritual assets, the doubts of duality were completely cut off. Thus he was freed from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. There was no longer any chance of his becoming entangled in birth and death, for he was freed from material form. Who are we referring to here? Arjuna. That's right. Please repeat. Because of his possessing spiritual assets, the doubts of duality were completely cut off. Thus he was freed from the three modes of material nature and placed in transcendence. There was no longer any chance of his becoming entangled in birth and death. For he was freed from material form. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thoughts of duality begin from the misconception of the material body, which is accepted as the self by less intelligent persons. The most foolish part of our ignorance is our identifying this material body with the self. Everything in relation with the body is ignorantly accepted as our own. Doubts due to misconceptions of myself and mine, in other words, my body, my relatives, my property, my wife, my children, my wealth, my country, my community, and hundreds and thousands of similar illusory contemplations cause bewilderment for the conditioned soul. By assimilating the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from such bewilderment, because real knowledge is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, is everything, including oneself. Everything is a manifestation of his potency as part and parcel. The potency and the potent are non-different, so the conception of duality is at once mitigated by attainment of perfect knowledge. As soon as Arjuna took up the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, expert as he was, he could at once eradicate the material conception of Lord Krishna, his eternal friend. He could realize that the Lord was still present before him by his instruction, by his form, by his pastimes, by his qualities, and everything else related to him. He could realize that Lord Krishna, his friend, was still present before him by his transcendental presence in different non-dual energies, and there was no question of attainment of the association of the Lord by another change of body under the influence of time and space. By attainment of absolute knowledge, one can be in association with the Lord constantly, even in this present life, simply by hearing, chanting, thinking, and worshiping the Supreme Lord. One can see him, one can feel his presence, even in this present life, simply by understanding the Advaya Gyan Lord, or the Absolute Lord, through the process of devotional service, which begins with hearing about him. Lord Chaitanya says that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can at once wash up the dust on the mirror of pure consciousness, and as soon as the dust is removed, one is at once freed from all material conditions. To become free from material conditions means to liberate the soul. As soon as one is therefore situated in absolute knowledge, his material conception of life is removed, or he emerges from a false conception of life. Thus the function of the pure soul is revived in spiritual realization. This practical realization of the living being is made possible due to his becoming free from the reaction of the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. By the grace of the Lord, a pure devotee is at once raised to the place of the Absolute, and there is no chance of the devotees becoming materially entangled again in conditioned life. One is not able to feel the presence of the Lord in all circumstances until one is endowed with the required transcendental vision made possible by devotional service prescribed in the revealed scriptures. Arjuna had attained this stage long before on the Battle of Kurukshetra, and when he apparently felt the absence of the Lord, he at once took shelter of the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, and thus again he was placed in his original position. This is the position of Vishoka, or the stage of being freed from all grief and anxieties. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shinakayam Chakshur Umoitanyam Tasmai Shri Vahinamaha Mancha Kalpai Terebhyascha Kripa Sindhubya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namaha. So here essentially it's saying that Arjuna was released from the modes of material nature and he attained liberation even while in his current body. And this is known as a Jivan Mukta. So one is liberated although he's still living in the present body. And in the previous shloka, it was explained how he achieved that. Does anybody remember? How did he achieve that? There was a Bhagavad Gita shloka quoted. Mamana bhava madbhakto namajimam namaskuru namavaishasi yukmanam atmana matparayanaha. So through the constant remembrance and association of the Lord is how Arjuna attained liberation while still in the current body. And a very important point here, and one that is important for all our practices in bhakti, is that this was attained through the grace of the Lord. So everything that we do is attained through Krishna's mercy or grace. Right? And what is our part? Our part is that we endeavor in the processes of devotional service and we try to develop love for Godhead. But then all advancement happens through His grace, through the grace of Krishna. So there was a lot of information in this purport. I thought we could just start to break it down a little bit. In the purport, Prabhupada says, doubts of duality begin from the misconception of the material body, which is accepted as the self by less intelligent persons. The most foolish part of our ignorance is our identifying with this material body, with the self. So he starts off the purport in that way. And Prabhupada has said that the beginning of spiritual life is this understanding that we're not the body. And the particular Bhagavad Gita shloka that he says at the beginning of our understanding is 2.13. Kamaram yavanam jara dirastatranam uyati. The dear person, the sober person, he understands the changing of the body and the final release from the material body and death. He understands the real, you know, what is really going on there. He's not bewildered by these changes of the body. And in that purport, Prabhupada gives the definition of adhira. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, such a person is known as adhira. So he's not deluded by his material body or his material body identity. And he understands the big picture and what it's all about. So the Dhira has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual. I was thinking how this is all well and good, and we all sort of understand this, and we know the shloka inside and out, and I'm not the body, but we're really put to the test with this realization when somebody close to us is leaving the body, isn't it? It's not so difficult if somebody over there is leaving the body, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, they're changing the body. You know, it's all natural. It's all Krishna's arrangement. But when it's somebody close to us, is it so easy? It's not so easy. And our realization is really put to the test, you know, that we can see our loved ones as not that person who we had past times with or, you know, the parent who was taking care of us our whole life. They're not that. They're actually something else. It's not so easy. This is a very good opportunity to practice. And I think when that happens to us, when a loved one leaves, it's a nice opportunity for us to like go deeper into Krishna consciousness, isn't it? To really try to understand that on a deeper level. And to really be realized in this shloka 2.13. So can we be a dear when a loved one is leaving the planet? Can we apply the shloka then? And Prabhupada gives here a very nice proper perspective or proper way how we can see that situation, how we should see that situation. And especially in the context because Arjuna was lamenting for the possible that he might kill his relatives, and you know, he didn't want his dear one's relatives to die, Bhishma and Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. So Krishna here tells him that, well, instead of looking at it that way, you should see that you should rejoice for their changing bodies from old ones to new ones, and thereby rejuvenating their energy. So that's a nice way for us to look at if a loved one is leaving. We should rejoice for their changing of the bodies from old to new, and thereby rejuvenating their energy. It's painful because they're leaving our current association. Like, that's the painful part. But we have to understand that they're done with that association on a spirit soul level. They're done, you know, with that program and being our relative or whatever. And they have to move on in a spiritual sense. And it's all for the best for everyone. So the proper perspective is that we should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, and thereby rejuvenating their energy. Mm-hmm. Does anybody want to share an experience with that? And if the loved one was leaving and you were able to, you know, see it in that perspective, or you tried anyway? Mm-hmm. Yes, Mother Sikita?
So my sister, who's 1 year younger than me, she had ovarian cancer and put up quite a good fight. But then the time came that she was leaving. And I was going to drive up there, but my other sister said, when she told her that I was coming, I was going to drive. She said, I don't think I can wait. So I flew up and asked the doctor there if I could spend the night. He said he didn't think so because of COVID, but then he came back and said I could. So I spent the night with her with Prabhupada chanting, and also played Ave Maria, you know, a Catholic song that she liked, so kind of interchanged it so she would feel comfortable. And, you know, I spent so much time with her, right? My sister, who's 1 year younger, was so sad, but her body was so deteriorated where she could hardly breathe. So I was actually able to feel sad but happy that she was leaving in such an auspicious way.
And she was going to get a new body.
Yeah, there was no alternative, really.
Thank you. So, how fortunate she had you as a sister. So we should try to have a proper understanding of this material body, not just knowing I'm not the body and sort of being, you know, disconnected from it, or just the material body, you know, or I'm not that. And it's going to get old. So we've been talking about having a proper understanding. And Prahlad Maharaj says, well, the body is temporary, it is meaningful because one can perform devotional service in it. And one is meant to do that with the material body. So we've been discussing in some prior classes about our two identities, Tamahar Prabhu and Prana Govinda Prabhu, where speaking about this, and I think it's a really important teaching. You know, we have our constitutional or fundamental identity, which is our dharma relating to the spirit soul, and then we have our conditional or functional identity, which is the temporary identity, and it's related to the body. And so the proper handling of that is that we dovetail. We don't try to give up the conditional functional identity, but we dovetail that. We dovetail our material identity, and we try to put our fundamental identity, our constitutional or spiritual identity, above the material identity. So we dovetail the material identity, and we try to put the spiritual identity above the material identity, and if we do that, then we are properly seeing this material body, and we're properly using this material body. We're not just saying, I'm just not the body. And this is a proper understanding and a proper use of the body. And Tamahar Prabhu was also saying we want to bring them in parallel, those two identities, as much as possible. I thought that was very nice. So then what keeps us from, you know, what keeps us from having that vision and applying it in our daily life? Well, we constantly have to hear about it and we constantly have to apply it. But the ahankara, the false ego, wants to keep us in that material identity. You know, just give an example. If we have like some nostalgia for our past or some emotions related to our past, you know, for example, like our childhood pastimes, you know, we can understand how deep that is, you know, like, oh yeah, my happy childhood, and how deep that feeling is and that identification. But even when we were having pastimes with those so-called relatives and people, it was like temporary, right? And it wasn't real in an ultimate sense, right? But there's this like feeling of nostalgia for that, or like my lost childhood. You know, so this feeling, this ahankara, this false ego is always trying to kind of like sneak in there, right? And it's not that we have to like beat it down or anything. We just have to put it in proper perspective, right? I'm that happy childhood, and that childhood is not really like who I am. Although it happened and it was real, it's not really the ultimate reality. And there's often like an aspect of this illusory potency that makes us think that it was better than it actually was, isn't it? Like, for example, if you remember your childhood, if you had a happy childhood, oh, like, you remember just like very generally that it was happy, but if you try to remember the details of your childhood, you know, maybe you remember like unhappy times or just like a struggle. I remember personally thinking, like, as a child, that it was frustrating to me that I was always dependent on like adults to get anything accomplished. I didn't like the fact that I was always like dependent on them, and like they may or may not deliver. Like, I didn't like that idea at all. So, and I remember feeling that frustration and the kind of like anger about that. So you know, even though like the idea is there, the happy childhood, I do remember like those moments as well. So I'm sure you can like relate to that idea. Like, it wasn't so great, but we remember it as so great. Somehow that's like a function of Maya, or like a function of the material mind, isn't it? I'm sure most of you can give examples of that. And just really quick example from the world, just for fun. There was this like really popular movie in the early 70s. It was called The Way We Were. It was Barbra Streisand and Robert Redford. It was very popular, and there was like a song associated with it, you know, and it was very beautiful, and it was just like a huge hit. And the essence of that film was, I think it illustrates that point very nicely, of how we remember the past, like not quite the way it was. Like, we remember the past through rose-colored glasses. So there were these two people who got married, Redford and Streisand. And from day one, they were like incompatible, right? From day one, like just fundamentally incompatible. And, but they had like one or two things in common, and for some reason, like they got married. So, you know, they had some affection for each other, but because they were like so fundamentally incompatible, it's just like they made each other miserable, like from day one in their marriage, you know? But there were like some good times interspersed throughout. So anyway, so eventually they end up getting divorced, because it just like doesn't work when you're like fundamentally incompatible with somebody. And so they end up getting divorced, and then at the end, they're like remarried to like proper spouses for themselves, but they just happen to meet by chance. And you know, and then there's this like nostalgia for their past together, like just momentary. You know, and I thought that was like a great example, like, oh yeah, the way we were, but the way you were was like, it made you miserable from like day one, you know, but they had this like nostalgia about the way we were. So I thought that was a good example of that. Just because it's fun. So there was a song associated with that, and it's really interesting because it illustrates this point very nicely, and it says, memories may be beautiful, and yet what's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. Right? What may be beautiful, memories are may be beautiful, but what's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. So what we'll remember is the laughter. Whenever we remember, we'll remember the laughter. We'll remember only the good times. So I thought that was a very nice illustration of that aspect of Maya, the illusory potency. And Pala Maharaj says that all this paraphernalia related to the body is very near and dear as long as the body exists. But as soon as the body is destroyed, all things related to that body are also finished. So when a dear one dies, what happened to all your pastimes that you had with that person? Finished. Right? And in one sense, they were never real, in an absolute sense. This is a nice shloka about the body, Rupala Maharaj. He says that the living entity desires comfort for his body and makes many plans for this purpose, but actually the body is the property of others. Indeed, the perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves him aside. The perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves him aside. That's pretty heavy. It leaves him aside, and it's so true, right? The living entity wastes his time in a futile attempt to gain material possessions for the comfort of one body after another. And it's a futile attempt, and it's a waste of energy that should be spent in spiritual endeavors. But it was a nice idea to think of when we take diksha and when we take a spiritual name, Sanskrit name. It's a way of accepting like a new identity. I'm accepting a spiritual identity. I'm not that person, that name that I was born into, or that material identity. I'm not that person. I'm accepting a new identity, and therefore I get a spiritual name. So I thought that was a nice ritual of this idea of accepting something. My identity is beyond this material body, or beyond this material birth that I have taken. You know, in this country or in that situation, my identity is beyond all that. Another point in the purport, it says that Arjuna was lamenting when learning Krishna. Well, this was in a prior shloka, is that Arjuna was lamenting when learning that Krishna has left the planet, but then he again took up the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. And in this purport, it says, as soon as Arjuna took up the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, expert as he was, he could at once eradicate the material conception of the Lord as his eternal friend. By assimilating the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from such bewilderment. So that was a really nice point. And it's also instructional for us that when we have that material lamentation, or you know, when a dear one has left the body, or just some difficult situation, you know, how can we adapt to Shastra Chakshus? How can we adapt the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita to understand our different identity as the spirit soul, and to deal with that situation in a proper way, in a Shastric way, instead of lamenting in a material way? And it's a very, very important thing to do constantly. If anybody would like to share a situation, and I know Mother Sukhita already did, of how they were dealing with a difficult situation, but then they adopted a Shastra Chakshus, or they applied a teaching from the Bhagavad Gita, or understanding of a spiritual identity to deal with that situation. Did anybody have another example of that? Well, thank you. Mother Sukhita already gave one with her sister. And so it's something that we constantly have to put into use, and that's why hearing is so important, and reading on our own, and understanding, trying to be realized on these shlokas, you know, not just mouthing the words, but trying to understand what it means, and trying to always adopt that Shastra Chakshus, and apply the teachings of the Gita. As soon as Arjuna took up the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, expert as he was, he could at once eradicate the material conception of the Lord as his friend. And by assimilating the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita, one is sure to be released from such bewilderment. So even Arjuna, right, even expert as he was, even he was subject to temporary material limitation or having a material vision, right? Even Arjuna, so what to speak of us. But he was able to eradicate that by applying the teachings of Krishna. And another example of adopting the Shastra Chakshus was given already above when I was speaking about Bhagavad Gita 2.13, how Krishna tells Arjuna that he should rejoice of his relatives leaving their bodies because they will get new bodies and they will get rejuvenated and new energy. So that is one idea of, you know, taking a material situation and applying a spiritual application of Shastra Chakshus. Okay, just one last point because we're getting to that part of the class that's almost over. So by engaging in Krishna consciousness, so Arjuna was released from the modes, the material nature, and he attained liberation even while in this current body. And this was achieved through his constant hearing and associating with the Lord, right? So this happens, I found a nice shloka in the 14th chapter of the Gita that describes this. And it's saying how it's a gradual process to achieve that, but actually one can immediately be put into transcendence, immediately come over the modes by engaging in devotional service. So that is immediate coming above the modes, the Brahma-Bhuta platform, and then gradually, by engaging in devotional service, one can be released from the modes of material nature. And I'll just finish with the shloka from the Gita, it's 14:19. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord, who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. By the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master, a living entity can know of his spiritual position, his material body, his senses, how he is entrapped, how he is under the spell of the material modes of nature. He is helpless, being in the grip of these modes. But when he can see his real position, then he can attain the transcendental platform, having the scope for spiritual life. A man in Krishna consciousness is not controlled by the spell of the material modes of nature. One who has surrendered to Krishna is relieved from the activities of material nature. For one who is able to see things as they are, the influence of the material nature gradually ceases, right? So by engaging in devotional service, we can immediately come to the platform above the modes, but to actually gain release from material nature is something that happens over time and by constantly engaging in devotional service and through the mercy of the Lord. The influence of the material nature gradually ceases. Bhagavad Gita 14:26, one who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. And then one who has achieved that release from material nature by the mercy of Krishna, Prabhupada says the symptoms of such a person, or a jivan mukta, one who is liberated even while in this body, are in Bhagavad Gita 18:54. These are the symptoms. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na shochati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards all living entities. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. That's symptoms of a person liberated from the modes of material nature, according to Prabhupada. It's not my idea. Okay, I'll stop there and see what the discussion is.
I was just thinking of this idea of forgetfulness that you brought up. It's such a significant one, because really, because of our desire to forget, that's when you find yourself in the true world. Like Sarvastra Chahamriti, son of Ishto, Krishna says that he's the source of all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So when you want to forget, because you want to enjoy, Krishna lets you.
Here you go, here's the false ego. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, just how important that concept is, and how we're always trying to remember, because sometimes we forget, even in a day's period. You know, there's times we're remembering, times we're forgetting.
Arjuna was forgetting, right? So, right. As expert as he was, right? Thank you. That's a nice point.
I was thinking in example, I had some relative came from Toronto. So they flew from Toronto to Gainesville, and I picked them up, then they took a bus from here to Miami, then went for a cruise for 7 days, then came back, then again took another bus, then came here, then I took them to the airport, Orlando, then they took another flight, and they went to Toronto. So I was just having a conversation with them 2 years back. We can apply the same idea, that the soul traveling took a bus, cruises, or car, airplane, it's just a different body. But you remain the same, and at the end when you come to home, it's like, all those body, you don't have...
I'm so tired from this trip.
Yeah. Even though there is so many transportation, you can literally think. So we are traveling like this. We should be detached from not the body, but detached from the charmness of enjoyment.
That's a nice point.
Because Balladev Vidyabhusan Thakur says, those who are detached from material world, also detached from Krishna, who are they?
Impersonalists.
And there are a group of people who are detached from the material world and attached to Krishna. So they are devotees. And there are some people who are detached from Krishna and attached to material world. They are called materialists, sense and jaya.
Right.
So we can constantly check. Prabhupada gave you one nice, it's like an English sloka, you can say. He says, renunciation is compulsory, required. Then he says, renunciation is the result of genuine spiritual emotion. So that's spiritual. In other words, more we are attached to Guru Krishna and Shastra, his philosophy, chanting, then automatically detachment will develop. We don't have to endeavor detachment separately. So our goal should be attachment to Krishna.
And to, like you said, have that true sense of detachment. Like, to think of going on that like joy cruise, it's just something like so not palatable, right? It's like, no, I don't want to, you know, and just all the activities that I've been in a couple of cruises in, it's just like just pure trying to enjoy the senses. You know, and just to really be like, no, that's really miserable. Like, I really don't want to do that. It's like a genuine...
You know, they say, at the moment of death, all the things that we never wanted, they will disappear automatically. But all the things that we wanted will continue going with us. So there has to be focus, not so much what we don't want, or it's not important, because they will be finished anyway at the moment of death. But what we want, and we invest emotion in it, we are going to experience. There is no question of escaping.
Thank you.
So very important.
Thank you. I like the metaphor of the different bodies traveling in different vehicles, like a bus and a cruise. But you're just still the same person, and even when you get home after all of that, you're just still like, whatever you were in the beginning of the trip is exactly what you are still. Yes, anyone else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.